Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Human trafficking has emerged over the past decade as one of the fastest growing criminal activities in the world, claiming roughly 25 million victims. Last year, Ohio ranked fifth in the nation for human trafficking cases and the fourth worst for the number of victims. Women and girls are by far disproportionately impacted. In response, so-called drop-in centers have sprung up in Columbus along Sullivan Avenue, where prostitution and sex trafficking are rampant. We'll learn about how one of those centers operates later on. The Human Trafficking Initiative was established in the office of the Ohio Attorney General to end labor and sex trafficking in the state. Linda Powers is the legal director of the initiative. Welcome.
Welcome, Ann. How are you today?
I'm very well, thanks. A 2021 report showed the second highest number of federal human trafficking defendants, those being charged with trafficking in the nation in 2020. Yeah, can we make it crystal clear what we mean by a human trafficking defendant?
Well, a human trafficking defendant would be an individual. You have to look at human trafficking as being an organization. And when we look at a human trafficking defendant, we're looking at someone that is taking advantage of an individual for either sexual abuse or for human labor abuse. So when we look at a defendant in terms of who they are, we look at them as an organization that is supplying the individual victim or survivor to people that are wanting to purchase, or they're using them for labor so that they can go ahead and take advantage of them by having them with labor hours or not paying them. But a defendant, technically, under the law, would be someone that was charged or arrested. So legally, it would be someone that is classified as being charged as a defendant.
And not, it's not necessarily the quote-unquote prostitute when it comes to prostitution.
As a holistic, I come from a background of being a victim advocate before I was a prosecutor. So when I take a look at case-by-case basis, you have to take a look at who that individual might technically be. When you're looking at a prostitute, you have to look at holistically why they're in that position. Because as a victim advocate background coming into this human trafficking initiative, I look at it that the prostitution would most likely not be consensual. There's a reason why someone would want to get
They're
in.
They're desperate for one reason or another.
Exactly. And those could be a myriad of different reasons why. Because the way the background that I look at it is most women, when we're talking about prostitution, or it could be, it doesn't have to be women. It could be any individual.
Who's vulnerable.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's the key, the vulnerability. Are they really consenting to be part of that type of life or that type of activity?
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we are talking about the issue of human trafficking today. My guest right now is Linda Powers. She's legal director from the Ohio Attorney General's office. What do we know about why Ohio ranks so high in human trafficking, human trafficking arrests and in defendants?
I think genuinely the reason why we have trafficking numbers the way we have numbers is because we have the interstate system the way we do. If you take a look at, we have the turnpike that is going across the top of the state of Ohio, and that is a perfect way to go ahead and move victims between Chicago and New York. We also have 71 that is going from through the entire state as well. So I think in terms of the infrastructure, in terms of transportation of victims, it also is an issue as to why our numbers are high. I also think that we are actively, in terms of Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost and his human trafficking initiative, as well as his human trafficking commission, that we are getting out and we are speaking with people and letting them know what human trafficking is, and they're beginning to understand what is human trafficking. And that was one of his pillars, is that he wanted to empower people in the community to be able to see what human trafficking is and then battle it.
Are the same people, when we talk about human traffickers, will they typically be trafficking in laborers and in prostitution?
Well, the question becomes, is it one or the other?
Yeah.
Can't sexual trafficking be labor as well?
Right.
Because they are being utilized and used by a trafficker for purposes of profit. So is it it technically is labor as well as being sexual trafficking?
When we talk about the geography of this and the fact that Ohio is a crossroads, when I'm traveling and I go into like a rest area or something like that, I see the signs up in the bathrooms and that kind of a thing. Do those work?
Yes. I would say yes, they are, because we are we actively are out talking with survivors of human trafficking, and that might be our initial person that gives us a call. And they see those advertisements in the bathrooms, in the rest areas, and they go ahead and there are tips that are coming in from those areas. They also have that National Human Trafficking Hotline number in those areas as well. So we are potentially getting our hot tips coming from the National Human Trafficking Hotline as well.
Because we're talking about interstate commerce here, how well do states cooperate when it comes to this?
That is part of the thing that is growing as we go forward, is that we cannot look at these cases in a silo. Traffickers don't. As you talked about earlier, you talked about how it's all over the state and there's transportation and it's a commerce issue. Mm-hmm. It's the same aspect that traffickers are organized and they don't stick to a particular area. They're moving people all over. So it's important that we as an organization, as well as the federal government and their entities, we all are cooperating and not working in a silo, because they don't. We should be doing the same thing. And it is getting better every single year.
So how much help do you get from the federal government for this?
In terms of when you say this, in terms of...
Well, I guess the initiative and the work that you do in a state attorney general's office.
We have partners in all agencies of the federal government, and we are working with all agencies to try to combat this problem, because it is such an overwhelming issue.
And we've made the distinction sort of casually, but I'd like to clear it up, that there are child labor traffickers as well. There's a lot going on out there. This is not just, but to your point, how do you separate prostitution from labor?
Separating prostitution from labor, most in terms of looking at prosecutors that are looking at it as well as judges, they're going to probably see it as defined sexual trafficking and then labor, and they're going to think of it as more of the examples of the people that are working on the farms that are underpaid or not paid at all, that come over and may have they may be indebted, and they're trying to work off their indenture. Mm-hmm. So what in terms of the differences, that would be the differences that I think the prosecutors within the state as well as the judges would look at it.
And what other goals does your office have? Obviously, you want to end human trafficking, but what else?
You brought it up. One of the things that we really are very interested in is opening up communications so that there are several task forces that we have within the state of Ohio. We started out with 5. Now we're up to 7. There are a number of other task forces that are in their infancy right now and starting to create in other parts of the state. It wouldn't be nice to have every single region of the state have a task force. And one of the goals of HTI, because task forces, human trafficking task forces, fall within our parameters. And they work with BCI and OCIC as well. And what happens is that we as a goal would like there to be transparency and communication between each of the task forces, as well as the federal government. So if we can create more communication going on, then there's a way that we can go ahead and try to combat this as well. One of the things that we are doing internally is we are in the process of getting a succinct, later on you're going to have someone that's coming in and they're going to be talking about holistically helping the victims and the survivors in these cases. And one of the things that we're working on right now is getting a database of succinct help for the survivors, because we have to take a survivor as they are right now and find out what their needs are. So it would be one of the goals we have was to make sure that we have some sort of database where a survivor could get into our website and find some NGOs or some social service agencies that would help whatever their particular need may be, because as we discussed earlier, there are myriads of needs that make them vulnerable to these traffickers.
You know, obviously it's just like with drugs, it wouldn't be a problem if there wasn't a demand. What about the demand side of this?
And that's a key, is that it's kind of a, as we talked about, it's an organization. So you have the suppliers and then you have the demand, and that would be the buyers. One of the things that the Attorney General is very, very key on is making sure that we look at the demand and we go after the demand, because one of the things that we have to do is we have to ensure that the traffickers and the Johns are brought to justice. And if we can stop the demand, there's no profit for the traffickers. So the key is to stop the demand, which is why you've seen that there's been a lot of task forces that are working within the state of Ohio on the demand issue.
Is there evidence that this could work? Can you ever get rid of this demand?
What we're trying to do, and we have the John schools, and one of the aspects of the John schools is that we're trying to teach them, train the Johns, that they need to understand that what they're doing when they are going out is they are actually supporting the exploitation. And going back to letting them know what they're supporting, some of them are deciding they don't want to be involved with that anymore when they realize that their actions are having ramifications on so many other people.
Do you think that there's enough other penalties thrown at them?
That's a good question.
I mean, John School sounds nice compared to going to jail.
And the prosecution side of me thinks that there should be a little bit of jail there, so there's some stigma.
Right. There isn't the same kind of stigma for buyers as there are for sellers.
Correct.
Why do human trafficking cases get dismissed so often or pleaded down on so many occasions, and how does that affect the work you're trying to do?
I think the reason why that happens is because they're complicated cases. They take a lot of time. Victims, when they come in, are somewhat different than your normal sexual assault victims. There is a grooming process that's gone on, and a lot of prosecutors and law enforcement and judges do not understand. I'm not saying all of them. Some, the more education that we're getting out there on trauma bonding, I think they're beginning to understand that there is this grooming process and that the survivors have this kinship of loyalty to their traffickers because they have been taken advantage of. So I think that that is one great issue, is that understanding the whole trauma bond issue. We also have to understand that victims don't always react the way we anticipate that they're going to react. And I don't know if it's an issue because they see things on TV or they see things in the movie. Oftentimes, we will have survivors that may initially cry, they may initially report, but then they may not want to go ahead and cooperate because they have that bond with their trafficker. So that is an issue. That's that one of the things that a goal that I have with my trainings is that I came from the elder justice side with I would prosecute financial exploitation of the elderly. And one of the things that I find very important is that you can try a case evidence-based, which means you try to get as much circumstantial evidence that you can so that you don't need a victim to come in and testify or limit them coming in. And that's one of the things that may be helpful on these cases is training prosecutors that they can go ahead and try a case. In a murder case or a homicide case, you don't have a victim coming in. So why aren't we trying some of the cases just like this with just circumstantial evidence, getting everything together so that we don't have to put the victim in a situation where they don't want to cooperate or they may be re-traumatized?
Yeah. And just one last question. What are your thoughts about special courts?
I think special courts are really important. And the reason why is because I think that if you had special courts, you would have prosecutors and judges that are familiar with concepts like this trauma bonding. And they would understand the grooming process that goes on. So they could understand that there was undue influence over these survivors and why they may react the way the survivors are reacting.
Linda Powers, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ann.
Linda Powers is the legal director for the Ohio Attorney General's office. It is called the Human Trafficking Initiative, and it was established in the office of the Ohio Attorney General to end labor and sex trafficking in the state of Ohio. We have more coming up. We're going to drill down and see what local drop-in centers and the role they play in destigmatizing, reaching out, making connections, and helping turn victims into survivors of trafficking. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Human trafficking has emerged over the past decade as one of the fastest growing criminal activities in the world, claiming roughly 25 million victims. Last year, Ohio ranked fifth in the nation for human trafficking cases and the fourth worst for the number of victims. Women and girls are by far disproportionately impacted. In response, so-called drop-in centers have sprung up in Columbus along Sullivan Avenue, where prostitution and sex trafficking are rampant. Esther Flores is a registered nurse and the founder of One Divine Line to Health. That's a nonprofit that runs the Love Drop-In Center. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Ann Fisher.
You grew up in poverty in the Bronx. You talk about that when you talk about what has turned out to be this mission for you. What's the connection?
I feel that, especially in this world that we live in, and specifically here in Columbus, as smart, it's been categorized as a smart city, and it's very much technologically savvy. However, if you look across the nation, these techie cities have also extreme poverty. And growing up in New York City, in the South Bronx, which continues to be the poorest borough, it is filled with violence, high crime rate. There's so many issues. And it's kind of, it shocks me, or it's mind-boggling for me to see that even now in my age, I'm in Columbus and I'm seeing all over all over the, you know, the same issues, the prostitution, the violence, the children, the women who see their body as a commodity in order for them to make sure that there's food, you know, on the table.
You're a nurse, a registered nurse. So you bring a lot to the table. Speaking of tables, since its founding, what is your sense about, well, tell me about the Love Drop-In Center and how it was founded and how it's worked, and then we can talk about some changes afoot.
Sure. The Love Drop-In Center basically is a center that is located in the epicenter of human trafficking and drug trafficking in Columbus. It has become a haven for women, their children, transgender individuals who are caught in this cycle. And what's so fortunate is that we're the only drop-in center in the city that serves this community at night. And as a harm reduction specialist, it's something that's innate as a registered nurse. We know that people need to be met where they're at. And that is why our numbers are shocking. And in comparison to all the numbers that are out there, we don't even come close. But our numbers are real because they're direct contact with these precious souls that need help.
What is being open at night, it seems like sort of a no-duh sort of a thing. So yep. What's the challenges of doing that? Because you're taking risks by doing that, right?
Absolutely. And that is why the other drop-in centers that just come up don't face the reality. And we have had to challenge the dope dealers. And that's another thing, Ann, that the world needs to know, especially here in Columbus. The pimp is now the dope dealer. He can get not only money from this person, but he can utilize this person also as a sex machine. And you imagine paying somebody $30 just to meet your own gratification, but at the same time, this person is going to make money. They also use and abuse the people.
Are all of the people who drop in at Love Drop-In Center victims of trafficking?
Actually, almost all of them. However, what's happened, because we're located on the Central Hilltop, we also have children who live in poverty come to our doors because they know that we cook every day to have a meal. And the sad thing about it is that these children are hungry. They are malnourished. They clinically present the symptoms of malnourished children. And it breaks my heart. I will never deny food to a child. So we have women also who experience domestic violence from other cultures. We have homeless children also. And it's just frustrating because we have women who sell themselves. They're not gonna even admit that they're human trafficking victims, but they live in their cars with their children, and sometimes they have to look at prostitution as a means to have funds. So we have all types of people coming into our center, but primarily they are human trafficking victims.
We are talking right now with Esther Flores. She's a registered nurse and the founder of One Divine Line to Health, which cares for victims of human trafficking and all the ancillary people affected by extreme poverty in this beautiful city of Columbus. If you have a question or comment for Esther, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What's it like at the drop-in center? Someone drops in, what happens?
Well, the services that we provide is not only as a public health nurse, I have to think about their health. We provide them with condoms. We also have a syringe exchange program. We have a peer supporter there. They're able to bathe shower, I should say. And really important is have their wounds treated. Actually, starting next month, it's been a while. I've been trying to get medical attention at the drop-in center, and now Mount Carmel, the Mount Carmel Foundation, or the Street Medicine Group, have decided to join our journey in providing healthcare to our folks. What's really important too is that we provide them a home meal. They're able to sit, they're able to rest too. It doesn't look like an institutional setting. It basically looks like a house.
Tell me about that.
The reason why we look at compassionate settings and is the fact that our people are criminalized. They're used to institutional settings, for example, the correction facility. When they attend the hospital, sometimes they are mistreated. They're discriminated against because they're automatically seen that, you know, there's an expression, they see a trick who is trying to get a trip, which means, you know, I see a prostitute who is here to get high. It's more than that. When a person who is hurting and seeks medical attention, their tolerance of pain has met its threshold and they need help. So because we are available to them and provide a non-judgmental approach, they are able to come in and receive the connection to resources and their basic needs met. And again, we're out there at night. We're there 8, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, open.
You know, why do you think, what are your thoughts about, you know, we talked to Linda Powers from the Attorney General's office about why they think Ohio is such a hotspot for human trafficking. What are your thoughts? What do you learn from this experience about why there's such a problem here?
I really feel that we need to look at a multifaceted approach. And human trafficking is multifaceted trauma. You can't not only focus on trying to expunge their record or trying to legalize prostitution. It's more than that. You need to see the person as a human being. So there's biochemical reactions that takes place when the human trafficking people are experiencing all types of assault. It's not just sexual assault. Every human trafficking victim that I've worked with has been sexually assaulted. They have been physically abused. So you imagine, this is where compassion has to set. I understand that the law is black and white, but the real issue that we have here, and this is why our numbers are the way they are, and my numbers are, again, far out there, because we know what we need to do. And I think, I'm not going to say I think, I know, and that's what's lacking, is we need to look at a compassionate approach. Let's look at a nursing approach, which is more holistic than just criminalizing the person and thinking and believing that incarcerating a traumatized person is going to rehabilitate them. It's not going to work. And that's why I am a strong believer that incarceration is not rehabilitation to traumatize folks.
Let's see. Is it Angelique or Angelic or Angela?
Angelica.
Hi, Angelica. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for offering this program. As a community member, I'm interested in learning how I can become more involved in engaging with the efforts of One Divine Line to Help.
The perfect route for you to take, Angelique, my little angel,
Angelica.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. is to reach out to us. You can look at our website, 1DL2H.org.
We'll post that on our website, okay, at WOSU.org.
Send me an email and let me know what you're interested in, because we work directly with them, not only at the center, but also on the streets. And that's why it's very powerful to also have a street outreach component to meet them where they're at, because that's how we build their trust. In this community, you need to gain that trust. So if you want to be at the center, then we can train you to learn how to interact with them. And it's very similar to when we are out there working with them too.
Angelica, thanks so much for that call. Again, we'll post a link to One Divine Line to Health at WOSU.org/allsides. So give us a call there. And let's see, Fabio in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Fabio.
Hey, Ann. It's a very good subject. So my question is two-pronged. One is how do we, what kind of a role do the family members play in the rehabilitation process? And number two, how are the elected representatives, what is their role and responsibility in helping in the rehabilitation process?
Okay, so how do you get family involved? I mean, when you get to that level of trust?
It's really difficult, sir, to have family engagement, especially if they're adults. We have people who are not only here locally, they've been trafficked from other states and even
so
other
this
countries.
Isn't even their home city.
It's not their home city. And we, our organization and our volunteers have become a blended family, a step parent. So we have to help them navigate the system. And the big issue that we have is that none, you listen to this, none of the resources are available at 5, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at nighttime. And I think that I'm learning more as I work with them is that we need to have the resources available, you know, at that time so that we can do the proper connection and have us or trusted individuals help them navigate the system because the healthcare system is too complicated.
Hmm. And as far as the government help?
Well, I think I'm learning more as I speak to even some of the House representatives, even in the area that we're located. They need to be proactive. First of all, they need to be responding to the emails and the phone calls. And it's a challenge when they see things like a man. I think I'm learning more and more that men tend to look at things much more different than women. If 95% of the people that we work with are women, then we need to have a compassionate and a feminine approach to handle this situation. And a lot of our law enforcement representatives and our House representatives in these districts are men. So they do not want to see something different. Giving somebody a fine because their cost soliciting is not only the solution. They have to have a change of mind and a change of behavior. The woman or the victim, because it can be a transgender individual, they need to be first built up. They have no self-esteem. They have no self-worth. They see their body as a commodity. So I think legislature, especially the our representatives, our leaders need to look at it more as a compassionate approach and sit down with an educated person like myself who has won the trust of these individuals in our city.
That's Esther Flores. She's a registered nurse and founder of One Divine Line to Health, cares for victims of human trafficking. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org. It's a very big issue in Ohio. Human trafficking has emerged as one of the fastest growing criminal activities in the world. Around the world, 25 million victims of human trafficking. And last year, Ohio ranked fifth in the nation for human trafficking cases and the fourth in the nation for the number of victims. Women and girls are by far disproportionately impacted, as Esther just explained. Coming up, we're going to talk more about the drop-in center that she runs, Love Drop-In Center. And we're going to also hear from an architect about how they're helping Love Drop-In Center expand in a meaningful way to better care for the victims of human trafficking. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher.
Human trafficking has emerged over the past decade as one of the fastest growing criminal activities in the world, claiming roughly 25 million victims. And Ohio last year ranked fifth in the nation for human trafficking cases and the fourth worst for the number of victims. Women and girls are by far disproportionately affected. In response, so-called drop-in centers have sprung up in Columbus along Sullivan Avenue, where prostitution and sex trafficking are rampant. Still with us is Esther Flores. She's the founder of One Divine Line to Health, which operates the Love Drop-In Center. Shar Hawkins is senior interior designer at the Design Group. She's working with Esther to expand the Love Drop-In Center and to create more safe space for human trafficking victims. Shar Hawkins, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell me about this pro bono project you're doing and how it differs from just adding on a bunch of square feet to this house.
Sure. Expansion has it touches my heart. I'm going to try very hard in this segment not to get emotional, but you know, Esther came to us and said, "I just need a safe place for these women to feel a bit of normalcy, have a movie night, relax on a couch, and feel safe, and that's all they needed." You know, it's not your typical expansion, because anytime, you know, we embark on a design, you have to think about the people that are going to be using it. And these women are, I can't even imagine psychologically and emotionally what they're going through. And, you know, to be able to expand on this drop-in center and help Esther out in that way and provide a space that's comfortable to these women that are just so in need of something is incredible.
How did you prepare? How did you, what did you have to learn about to design the space?
Well, I mean, it was talking with Esther. I mean, as she has said, she's earned their trust. They just love her, and she loves them, and she knows what they need. And so it was working very closely with Esther to understand, you know, what this expansion needs to be, how it should function, how it should look, how much natural light, what, you know, the look and feel and function within the space all came from Esther.
The house that you have, the nonprofit owns it. It yes. was donated to you, right?
Absolutely. It took a beautiful soul who died, and Miss Sheffield, Stacy Sheffield, her husband decided to purchase the property and donate it to us, and then the community came in and raised $125,000 for us to get it renovated.
And so tell us about what this addition looks like.
It's beautiful.
Is it done? Is it done?
No.
Okay. The design is done.
The design is done. And again, it took multifaceted approach too. And what's really amazing is that architects are brilliant individuals. They can take the picture in somebody's mind, or in my case, the stick figures, the drawings, and then elaborate it. And their motto is basically, you know, design's group motto is designed to inspire. And that's basically what we want to do. This multi-purpose room is going to inspire our people to get out of Columbus, to get out of this tragic lifestyle, and see that there's more to this life than being a victim of all types of violence. And I'm so grateful to have Design Group to have a feminine approach. Remember,
what does that mean? I mean, what does that mean as a designer, Char?
To the feminine approach. So when Esther and I sat down and talked about, you know, what does it want to look like? What do these women need? Is it calming? Is it a quiet, neutral, calming, dark space to be cozy in? Or is it, and Esther interrupted me and said, it's unabashedly feminine. Okay. I want color. I want life. I want beauty. I want them to feel inspired and loved and happy in this place.
So then how does that translate into your design? What does it look like?
So we came up with some renderings, some 3D renderings of the space, and showed Esther some options. And of course, she gravitated to the more vibrant and colorful ones, but not, you know, not too much so that, you know, it's overstimulating. The one thing I will say is, you know, it took a minute for me to understand, because I don't know, you know, again, what these women go through and what their concerns might be. I had shown on the expansion a lot of windows. And Esther said, sure, I love it. But these women, you know, they need to feel safe first and foremost. And while I get you want to bring natural light in, we have to be cognizant of the fact that they don't want to be seen from the street. They don't want to be seen. They want to feel, you know, encapsulated and safe. So we did do some higher clear story style windows to bring in the natural light. But that was something that, you know, just working closely with Esther and fully understanding what these women will need in the space, that was one aspect that shed some light on how we need to go about this.
Harold in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Harold.
Hi there. Good morning. Nice program. I work on a public health study, and this program particularly caught my attention. I was wondering about donations, specifically clothing donations. Do you accept them, and where do they go, or where do you take any kind of donations if you're willing to donate?
Thank you, Harold. We are very specific with our with the items that we accept. One is because our women are very small, and it's so challenging to get like pants, like what we say, you know, skinny jeans and leggings, from 00 to size 6.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. So, and the items, actually emailing me, because I prefer to review the items, and it's by appointment that we accept the items. And the reason why is we can't just leave them out there on our porches. We have a back porch and a front
porch. Well, yeah, you're not Volunteers of America.
Yeah, we're not.
It's not what you do. Yeah.
And we also want to make sure that we are accepting the essentials, what we need, because it changes every month. So if you email me and you let me know what you're interested in, you can contact me, you know, through the website.
Thank you, Harold, for that question. Anybody else, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What about furnishing the space?
This is where my angel, Char, comes into play.
Char, what happened? What'd you do?
It's beautiful.
Well, and this is so funny. This is a small world situation. When we were planning the expansion, obviously it needs to be fit out with furniture that is home-like and comfortable, but Esther explained some of these women are wounded and it needs to be cleanable and durable. And so I reached out to a good friend, Cheryl Davis, who she owns the Davis Group, and it's a commercial furniture distributor and manufacturer's rep. And as it turns out, Esther knew Cheryl because she spoke to Cheryl's Girl Scout troop a while back. So the three of us met at the Davis Group showroom, and Cheryl, being the amazing woman that she is, has generously said, I will get you whatever you need at cost or with no markup whatsoever. Just when you're ready to finalize the furnishings, let's talk. So that's okay. How that will happen.
Is this room going to be a place where people can cook, or I mean, what are they going to do there?
It's the room is going to be multi-purpose. It's going to be more like a lounge type of a feel for it. But we also need to have furniture, and that was really important, that we can move around. I partner with some providers, especially harm reduction and some medical, you know, providers that will need to utilize the space too, so we can provide the medical attention that they need.
Like a clinic area?
Kind of like a clinic.
Okay.
We don't want the clinic feel.
Yeah.
But, you know, my experiences abroad, especially triaging, we want to have that ability to do that. And we can do movie nights. We can do pretty much anything that we want, as long as it feels comfortable. And I think that right now, with what I've seen, especially with the programs that they have, it really looks really nice.
If I go there, you know, as it stands now,
yes.
How many, like on a given night, are there a lot of people moving around in this house?
Our population is transient, and sometimes they can be, you know, we can have 3 girls come in at once and they can hang out with us for about 20 minutes. Or we can have the woman who is extremely tired, hasn't slept for 3 nights or 3 days, and she'll come and she'll just crash on the couch. We want to have that homey type of space. Our average, depending, we can have the maximum in one night at least 35 to 40 women.
All at
our center.
Once?
No, okay. They're transient. They come in and out. Yes.
And that is a function of the life they're living.
Yes, yes.
They got to get back out.
But we want to have a space that's big enough. You see this? And this is where common sense teaches us, out of sight, out of mind. So if we have a larger space, then the Johns are going to be roaming around and the girls are hanging out with us.
Well, I wondered if you're worried about that they'll figure out where you're at.
I'm not going to worry about that, because we have surveillance, we have cameras, and I've set some really strict boundaries, and I've confronted drug dealers in the past. We are a no drug zone, no soliciting, no loitering, no drug activity on our premises.
How about police? How do they cooperate or not?
That's a hot topic. It's considered a safe place. We have the sign out there. Cops are called if it's necessary. We only had 2 incidents last year, and it was more of a domestic violence situation. And another one that a woman ran to our center because somebody was going to kidnap her. And that was actually our first experience of listening to a woman talk to a cop. And both incidents, they were very compassionate. The cops dealt with the situation appropriately, and the women were validated. And I think that's very important. We have some issues in that area, because we have cops that do drugs with our women. And they also are out there, you know, purchasing sex and sometimes raping our women. It's been like that forever, and change is needed.
You know, making this place safe but warm and welcoming, I think the Claire Story windows, it makes sense, you know, mm-hmm. that you'd go that route. How else are you doing that, Char?
Well, I mean, it is a 16 foot by 20 foot room in which a woman can come and rest and feel comfortable or watch a movie with others. And so, you know, the floor needs to be, every surface needs to be cleanable. However, within that, you know, warm. So wood look flooring.
You're going to do wood look like luxury vinyl flooring,
yes.
That kind of thing, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's very durable, yeah. As well. The walls, some very vibrant accent walls, artwork and plants, and comfortable furniture, along with, you know, typical house can lighting versus, you know, institutional, what you would see in a typical commercial building, yeah. You won't see here. So we're doing what we can to make it very home-like, like the rest of her house is, and work within that, but also make sure that it's very durable and it's very cleanable, and it'll serve her well for many years to come.
What's the timeline, Esther?
the timeline is I have to have this addition built by September the 24th. I think it's very important to say that our mayor, Ginther, approved to fund our project. And we're just working with building and zoning right now to get our plans approved. It mm-hmm. it can be built within 3 months, if possible. You know, it depends. I work with other groups that can probably do it in a month. So that's our timeline to have it built by the 24th of September. That's what I signed.
Well, good luck. I'm looking forward to see it. Esther Flores is a registered nurse and founder of One Divine Line to Health, which cares for victims of human trafficking. We'll have a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides so you can find out how you can help Esther. Esther, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ann.
And Shar Hawkins is senior interior designer at the architectural firm Design Group. She's been working with Esther to design a new addition to the house where Esther works out of. Shar, thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
And that's it for now. So thanks to you for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.